The Yankees are one game away from winning in yet another series. Go Yankees. You know what's great about sport? Anything is possible. Think about the Giants before Sunday's game. They were 0-5, and I thought for sure by Sunday night, early Monday morning, they would have been 0-6. But nope. And the Jets almost beat the New England Patriots. Oh, man. Someone's on the payroll over there at the NFL for the referees making the replay decisions. Anyway, I digress. But anyway, go Yankees. Big buzz in the air right here in New York City. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Always love to hear from you. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Incredible show coming your way. There's a contractor out in Long Island who does way more than just uses tools. He uses his heart. He's mending people's and lives all across Long Island because he's helping one family at a time. We're going to meet Jimmy Pannullo in a few minutes. But first, of course, you know, I got to rant about a few things, of course, right? So last night, the governor race is still on, heating up. November 7th isn't too far away. So Chris Christie, he's got one foot out the door, thankfully. Or one really heavy, thick thigh. Sorry, I digress. Kim Cordano and Phil Murphy are running. Now, are these two stellar candidates really represent the people, the fine people of the state of New Jersey? No, I think not. But more importantly, the thing that gets me is that years ago, it used to be something sought after to serve the public, to be a public servant. And nowadays, people avoid it like the plague. And I understand you're not going to go into this field for the money because it's not a lucrative field, but it's rewarding. I mean, think about, all right, the Bill of Rights, Constitution, the three branches of government. I mean, if you think about it, it's a well-oiled, well, it needs a little bit more oil machine. But the reality is, I mean, just being part of the judicial system, executive branch, legislative, to make this country operate, flow, whether you're working at the DMV, your local mayor, on his city council, whatever the level may be, a judge, municipal, Supreme Court. I mean, everyone has a vital part to play. And it's just a shame in 2017 with all the incredibly bright people we have in this country. I mean, we're a model for a lot of different worlds on many fronts. Obviously, we've slipped in certain areas, but it's really, I'm crestfallen about the lack of talent that is drawn to hold office. Now, you're probably expecting this to come full circle and talk about the current president, but yes, but even on a local level. And the reason why I thought about this last night, because I caught a little bit of the debate that was actually taking place at my alma mater, William Patterson University, last night. I caught it on the radio. And I just can't believe how, and I know this isn't their first time, but how low people sink to mudsling, to smear the other person. And I know some candidates are certainly have more propensity to do this than others. But the reality is, like, if you have a good platform, why would you resort to that? You can let them say whatever they want. You can retort, give a retort to their mudslinging in terms of if there's any characterization or any points, valid points about a protocol, a program, money, debt, you name it. But why do people have to resort to that? Well, you know the answer, because possibly they don't have a protocol to follow. They don't have any great ideas to come into office. And I guess, the people that have been in office for so long, Congress, yes, we put them there and we expect them to represent us in the most transparent and wholehearted manner. But obviously, speaking of gun control, I mean, that's obviously a very heated debate. And actually, I have not followed this. There was a instance in, was it Virginia? Not Virginia. Delaware yesterday. An office worker shot multiple colleagues. I believe several of them died. I mean, you know, when is enough going to be enough? So going back to my initial point, that we need very talented, hardworking, ethical, and morally minded people to serve. So if you're a parent and you have a child, start exposing them to the value of serving your country. Yes, it's great to serve in the military, but the military is not for everybody. But we need people to lead locally on a national level and a semi-national level, different branches of government. I mean, it's imperative because obviously for the well-functioning of our society, it's a shame. I know several people who work in Trenton, New Jersey, the capital of New Jersey, that have very good positions and work their tail off. They work 10, 12-hour days, and their iPhones are with them all weekend long. They're always at work because there are always things that are happening. Then, of course, there are government workers that, you know, have the or hold true the tradition of a government worker. You know, they're in at whatever, 8:30, out at 4:01, do the minimal. But that can be said in any industry. So, you know, it's interesting when we think about this in a macro sense that, you know, maybe do we need to pay people more? Would they be interested or drawn to an office more if they paid more money, was more lucrative? But I don't think so. I mean, to be CEO of a company, they're making what, $1 million? Maybe for nonprofits, they're making $500,000, $800,000, $1 million on many, many fronts of nonprofits. But for the for-profit field, we have many people who are actually serve the president and former presidents on their boards. As a matter of fact, it made headlines lately because a few of them actually canceled or declined serving anymore under Trump because of the way he spoke out about foreign countries, because these businesses do sales and business with foreign countries. Anyway, but the reality is that, you know, there's got to be something we can do because we need to get more qualified people in office. Do you think so? Ah, yeah, I just really, really think so. See what you can do. Work on it. You know, maybe you can run for your local office. I'm actually in a very, very small level thinking about getting involved politically. Only problem is for me, I certainly know how to talk to people, but I have a hard time kind of sugarcoating the truth. And with politics, I know you really have to be extremely delicate. Obviously, we have a lot of cases in point right now who are very direct, that hold very public offices. So, I mean, not being crass, but in terms of just being direct. So I'll consider pondering that. Actually, you know what? I did receive something in the mail yesterday. I was going to talk about in a future show, because when I received the documentation, I was going to share it on the on Facebook Live and also the show, that I am. I got a letter yesterday and a phone call. It said, on behalf of Governor Christie, we welcome you on the board of advisors for the New Jersey Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. At first, I'm like, is this a joke? Because someone told me about this, I think a year and a half ago. I submitted all my paperwork and I totally forgot about it after 3, 4, 5 months. And I get this call. And I'm like, so apparently my term is going to be in the next few weeks, starting in the next few weeks through 2018. So I'll go to meetings, advise the commission, because I went through the commission being visually impaired as a child and an adult. So I have a lot of insight. Of course, frequent insight listeners know I speak at schools and colleges and corporations nationally about overcoming adversity. So I volunteered a lot with organizations, nonprofit organizations that serve people with disabilities, et cetera, on every level. So that was kind of exciting to see. So I'll be able to report back to you. Maybe this will be a deciding factor whether I run for an office of some nature or not. But you know, it was nice. Last week, I had five talks in one day. It was pretty exhausting, actually. It was by Friday night, I didn't have any voice left to coach my son's soccer team. But it was really interesting because three of those talks occurred at my former schools, middle school and grammar school. So it was interesting to walk those hallways again and to talk about instances, which I talk about all the time, but that actually took place in the venue where I'm talking about. So before I began my first talk, I went to use the bathroom, which was the faculty room. Then I realized, actually, when I was walking in, that the adjacent door was where I went for, what did they call it back then? Basically, it's extra time, tutoring of some nature, to increase my reading speed, because only reading out of one eye, I read much slower, couldn't read chalkboards. So it was very interesting. Like, all these flashbacks were coming back to me. to the stories that I relate to in terms of being bullied and bullying back then, smoking pot in fifth grade. I mean, all of this took place in this school. So here I am, and I had to watch my language and my disclosure very carefully, depending on what grade I was speaking to at the present time, because I can introduce different things, or it had to eliminate certain topics and or how deep I can go, depending on the age specific of the audience. So it's very interesting. I really got a good kick out of it. It felt good. It almost felt like I went full circle. I haven't yet spoken at my high school, and that's something my booker is working on. But I think some speakers are actually not welcomed back to their high school because I think they're afraid they're going to speak badly about the actual school. I'm sure people can hold schools responsible, but I don't hold it the school's responsible. It's just my actions or lack of actions and how I chose to partake and how my visual disability was limiting. And there's all different ramifications. But the reality is I hope that's not the case, because they would be doing themselves a major, major disservice to the students that they serve, because hearing from anyone, and I think it's critical. Obviously, it's topic specific. Hearing from anyone who's attended a class, a college, a school, and to pass along some sage advice, I think is invaluable. As long as obviously the advice is credible. And that's why I got into speaking, because everything I speak about, I've lived, whether it's overcoming adversity, being born with a rare visual impairment, drugs and alcohol. Done that. Mental illness. Been there as well. Anti-bullying and more. So there's a lot to be discussed and talked about. And all schools, unfortunately, don't have the budgets for it, but they do what they can do. So if you're interested in having me speak at your school, check out markfarrellmotivation.com. So President Trump the other day currently is embattled in another public debacle because, of course, he denies saying to a slain soldier that to his mother via phone that he knew what he was signing up for. Now, who do you believe? The mother, why would she come out and say this if President Trump didn't say this? Right. I mean, here is a woman who lost her son, and a call from the president or the president's office or top brass is supposed to console in a very removed fashion, but to show the honor of their life, because that's what they do. You can't give anybody anything after the loss of a life except maybe kindness and words that will instill that their life was not lost in vain. But then again, there's President Trump, who I'm sure said to these exact words, or very close to it, that your son knew what he signed up for. I mean, come on. Why would you even consider saying something of that caliber? Oh, shame on you. Shame on you. So we're going to meet Jimmy Paluno in just a few minutes. He's actually worked on many, many homes out on Long Island, transforming people's lives to make them better. And obviously so the children that they have with disabilities. We're going to meet Jimmy in just a few minutes. He's taking off his tool belt, drinking his cup of coffee, and he's getting all set. So Miss New York City Subways was an event that occurred from 1941 to 1976. How cool is this? Picture like the old time black and white ads, almost like a Mimi Rogers or Doris Day film, but all their pictures would be in the subway. Well, it's being returned. Yes, in 2017, right here in New York City. Yay! And there's one little bit of twist on it. All genders are welcome. I think there's only two genders, but it says all genders. So maybe there's a third one I don't know about. But it's kind of cool. So if you win Mr. New York City Subways, your face gets plastered all over the subway. And it's all about developing goodwill and community relations and bonding and connecting the five boroughs. So it's a good initiative, I believe. And I think it's kind of a cool, catchy, campy thing to have it returned. It's going to be, again, featured in the subway cars. And the fact that it stopped in 1976 is returning in 2017, I think is a very, very cool thing. Almost as cool as women in Saudi Arabia having the right to drive a car. How cool is that? I mean, this happened about 3 weeks ago, and I've been wanting to talk about it. I actually know a woman who is from that country, and I want to have her on to speak about it. She hasn't been back since then, but what a giant leap for the women in that country. And of course, they have a gargantuan amount to still grow. Unfortunately, not to their faults. I mean, the right to vote, the right to not wear hijabs or walk side by side by men or their husband. I mean, you know, it's actually a very, you know, terrible country on many fronts and levels. And I think we have some strained relations with them now. But that aside, it is one step in the right direction. I mean, look at Rosa Parks. I mean, she took that one seat in a bus and she refused to move. And look what happened. It all changed from there. Not shortly thereafter there. So here's something I read the other day that makes you scratch your head. It makes you think about the society we live in and the accountability that we do or don't have. Because if my next guest picks up a hammer and he swings his hammer like framers do, and they're really long hammers, and he misses the nail or hits the nail and slides off and hits his thumb, should he sue the company that made that hammer or the nail or the 2x4 because maybe it was too much of a dent, or maybe it was dry, or maybe it was a saturated board? No, that's just a hazard of being a carpenter, right? Or a general contractor. So there's new legislation pending. It's called the Hot Car Act. Yeah, you can figure it out. So here's the pending legislation, because, you know, you've read about this nationally that kids have died because of heat stroke in the car. Because parents, yes, parents actually forget their kid is in the back of the car. And they get out and they leave the car for undetermined amount of time. Who knows? Half hour, hour, 90 minutes, half a day. And a kid suffers a fatal consequence. So now, a smart Democrat and the thing with Democrats is I'm mostly a Democrat. But the reality is they make us all look like fools. Like we have to have laws for all these different things. So now the Hot Car Act would put, I guess, a sensor in the back seats, almost like when you sit in the front seat now, a passenger. A light is displayed if I think they're too light, because the airbag can harm passengers under a certain weight. So I think a light is displayed. And that makes complete sense. An airbag can be lethal. That's been proven. But do we need a light, another light on that very busy cluster? One tells you what? You're low on gas. You're low on wiper fluid. Your tires need air. Maybe you didn't have the proper amount of caloric intake for breakfast. Maybe your wife is cheating on you, or husband's cheating on you. Like, when is enough? How many lights, idiot lights, do we need? Do we need a light to tell us that there's someone in the back seat? First of all, would it stand out? Should it just flash, idiot, bad parent, bad parent? If a light doesn't stop you, does it need to call your cell phone as soon as you leave the car within 10 feet to say, bad parent, turn around, get your child out of this hot, potentially hot car? Like, I just don't understand it. Like, when is enough enough? When is enough governing too much? Invasion of property. Like, if you're an adult, if you're in a parent situation, you are a parent, shouldn't you be responsible for the safety of your child in the back seat by knowing that they're there? All you have to do is look in your rearview mirror. All you have to do is turn around. All you have to do is talk to your child. Like, I never, ever, actually, the only time actually I can think about this is when I was a new parent. Maybe I was first 6-8 months. I remember getting into the car. My wife was in the car, getting in the car in the driveway and almost putting it in gear, or maybe putting my seatbelt on. She goes, "Where's Luke?" I'm like, "Oh my God, I left them in the house, in the car seat and everything." But that's because I was a new parent. What never, ever happened would leave my child in a car. I mean, that's complete nonsense. I mean, I guess if you're inebriated, yes, yes. Or if you're under the influence of drugs or other opioids or something of that nature, yeah, maybe you will. But you shouldn't obviously be under the influence of anything when you're driving, and certainly as a parent. So, you know, I get a kick out of that when I hear things of that nature. Because, you know, when is enough enough? If you're that idiotic, and yes, listen, as parents, we get distracted easily. And sometimes I ask my kids to be quiet because if I have to focus on driving, things of that nature. But I can't imagine just getting out of the car and not remembering that your child's in the back seat. I mean, sometimes, you know, I hope this doesn't put this out in a public display of being a bad parent. Sometimes if I come home, and whatever time it is, and my kid is passed out, and this kid needs some sleep, needs some Z's, I will pull the car into the garage, because I can pull it fully into the garage, and I have a door to my garage, screen door, leave it open, with the car door open, the windows down. Obviously, I don't do this in the winter because if it's cold, or if I have a jacket on or a blanket, which I keep in the car, and I let the kids sleep. I'm right there in the kitchen, literally less than 20 feet away. But sometimes, you know, you have to do that for your kid. But that is a controlled scenario. You don't have to worry about heat. You don't have to worry about being in the public or being seen, you know, any intruders, et cetera. So you understand my point. I just think it's ridiculous legislation, and, you know, I'm sure it'll pass. So, and obviously, we'll have to pay for this. It'll be passed down to the consumer, right? Yeah, I imagine so. So Jimmy Pannullo has been doing carpentry for 27 years. And he decided about, just 5 years ago, that, you know, it's just more than just creating a beautiful structure, a house that someone can call a home, that where memories are built with times are just experienced, and obviously sad times as well. But a home is where the heart lies. And of course, it doesn't matter the construction. I tell my family, a home is wherever we are. But for some people, certainly, having a home is much more difficult because lack of finances. And if you have a child with a disability or a medical issue, that can be very, very strapping. I'm happy to introduce the founder, Jimmy Pannullo, to Be a Kid Foundation from Long Island. Hey, Jimmy, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Climb up to the microphone here. Thanks for taking a break from your busy day. I'm sure you got 5,000 different jobs going on, framing, sheetrocking, electrical, plumbing, et cetera. But thanks for coming here today, because the piece that aired on the Today Show back in, I think, May of this year was a wonderful segment on how you do this out of the goodness of your heart.
Yes. Basically, I just enjoy giving back to my community, giving back to families that need some help any way I can.
So you're a single father. Your son is 8 years of age.
Yes.
Do you think this obviously is something that pulls on your heartstrings, being a father and seeing other families in need and knowing that the good fortune that you have?
Well, I mean, I've always been more inclined to help when I can, but definitely having a child made me a lot softer, I would say.
So, not by looking at you. You're like The Rock Jr. We'll get to why you're so buff in a few minutes here.
But I know, it's just definitely having a child definitely opens your eyes to a lot more things and seeing how blessed you truly are having a child with no problems.
So what was the epiphany of Be a Kid, the onset, the aha moment, the eureka moment, where you said, wow, I have this skill set. I've been a carpenter for 27 years. Obviously, your father is very gifted as well,
yes.
Family company.
Yes.
Great name, great reputation. I guess you realize that, you know, you have something that a lot of people don't have, a skill that can really impact someone's life.
Well, again, it started about 5 years ago. A friend of mine, Alyssa Sukas, she would always comment on a child's page, Baby Easton, out of Weedsport. And I had come across the page, and knowing that I enjoy just giving back and helping out, thought that incorporating my business and my hands with families would be a great way to do it. And so that was the first family we worked with 5 years ago.
So how did you approach his family? It's not like he can walk on the door and be like Ed McMahon. Hey, you just won $10,000. Hey,
no.
You know what? I really don't like the look of your facade. Let's redo it. Yeah.
No, so basically what happened was I reached out to the family through their page. They had a Facebook page and saying that I'm a contractor from Long Island, not knowing where they were from at the time, that I would love to give Baby Easton a nursery for when he came home from the hospital. So about a week later, the aunt reached out to me via email saying that she had read the post and that they were interviewing all the contractors for the job, and that she was handling, you know, all the interviewing, and whoever gave the best price would do the work. So I stressed that all the work that we were doing was free of charge. And that was it.
That moved you to the front of the line.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
You know, so from that point.
And what were they looking for back then?
They were just looking to make a little more of a comfortable space for Easton when he came home from the hospital.
And so, Easton's condition was, or is?
I don't really pronounce it the right way, but it's epidermis bullosa, which is.
That's right.
Yeah, so
skin condition.
Skin condition where his skin technically just falls off when you touch it. So with speaking with Jared, which is Easton's dad, because Danielle was in Cincinnati with Easton because he was only 3 months old at the time. And they were 26 years old.
Wow.
With already three boys.
That's a challenge in and of itself.
Yes, exactly. Wow, man, and then sure. You have a fourth who's who's very sick.
That's challenges.
So I spoke to Jared, made an appointment, made time to go up to visit, and we went up there with two other friends of mine, workers, and I spoke to Jared about what he needed, what they wanted, and then I made a suggestion of opening up their small bedroom to Easton's, combining two bedrooms into one kind of, with some kind of separation, giving them a nursery for him where they could also monitor him just by looking over.
And have privacy as well.
Sure. In turn, that actually gave the three boys the short handle of the stick because now they're in one room. So we started with Easton's room, and I felt I just couldn't leave the parents' room unattended, untouched, I should say, because it's adjacent to it. So we ended up redoing their room. And then the boys' room, I felt, they're getting shafted in a sense because, so let's redo their room.
Exactly.
So it kind of just escalated to three bedrooms.
Fantastic.
So we did a lot of trim work. Easton had, I would say, his was the nicest. He had the wainscoting. His was the nicest, all tricked out, per se. But everyone else had, crown moldings and still nice stuff. And it was just...
So go back to the actual interaction with you and the couple, because at certain point, they must be like, well, why are you doing this?
I get that a lot of times, and it's funny.
I imagine you sitting at the kitchen table or counter, and you're both drinking coffee or tea or something, and they say this to you, and, it's too good to be true.
Well, it's funny because there was three work trips to Weedsport, and the last trip was like almost the last day of setting up because Ethan was coming home from the hospital that day, so we was getting the furniture together and all the finishing touches. And Jared and I were talking on the way back, and he said, "It goes, a lot of people said that you were going to scam us, like you were just like, why would a contractor 6 hours away drive up and just do work for you for free? There has to be some kind of a catch, some kind of a gimmick, some kind of he wants something." And but the
point
is,
you do want something. You want them to be more comfortable,
exactly,
and stable,
right? And at the end of the day, in a crazy world that we live in, there's a lot of good people out there. It's just sheltered by all the crap that's out there that's
exactly.
covering it.
That's broadcasted.
But going back to your original question, the why? It's just because I can. Basically, I'm able to.
So talk about the reveal. Obviously, sometimes, unlike these shows where people come in and are like, oh, my God, they've been out for 2 months. I don't think so.
Right.
You can tell the people who are genuinely surprised versus the ones who are, trying to act it. So, the walk away, when you get back in your truck after the goodbyes have been said and you're shaking hands and hugs and tears, I'm sure that are shared. You must be immensely full of pride. And just to know that these families are just a smidge a better off. You're not curing whatever disease or disability that they have, but you're making life that just more palatable.
Yeah, it's just, there's no price tag on being able to give back to a family and just get a thank you back.
That's fantastic.
There's no price tag on that.
So choosing the families, is there a plethora of people out there that you have to weed through, and is it a clear cut choice?
Sometimes it's tough. I generally try and put a Facebook post out there so that it's someone who knows someone that really needs the work, that needs the help. That's usually the way I go about it.
And how do you decipher who really needs the work? Obviously,
it's tough.
What you may think in terms of physically, the physical structure of the house and or aesthetically versus someone who's financially in need.
Right. Well, it is tough. You don't know what someone really needs.
Because you're not asking for their
bank
tax
statements.
Returns.
Yeah, no, yeah. We don't check any of that. You just hope that,
because then they would think you're probably out to scam them.
Yeah, it's
true. Which you can't. Obviously, you're relying on good faith, and I'm sure the people who are referring you, possibly like your first story example that you said, that probably has some degree of knowledge of, their
What's
financial status.
On. Yeah. Sometimes it happens, but, it's hard. It's hard. We don't know who is what. So
you talk about helping another family. It's your current project.
Yes.
Victoria.
Yes.
And this is a great situation because this is a family who's really in need. Tell us about Victoria and her mother, Lisa.
Lisa and the boys and Victoria, they live with the parents. And Victoria has a very rare condition as well, that IDP, which kind of it attacks her blood counts. So almost like leukemia, you know, where that's cancer, but she doesn't have that, but it attacks it in a similar fashion. So she needs to get treatments every month to keep her counts up high enough that she doesn't have bruising and whatnot, but she still does have all that.
So how were you introduced to her? Same thing, Facebook, et cetera, social media?
Through a friend of mine, Christine, had reached out to me saying she knew a family looking that might need some assistance.
So it seemed like an easy decision.
Yeah, exactly. So I met up with Lisa and her parents. We spoke, and the rest was history.
And I'm happy to say that Lisa Monteforti is on the phone right now. Lisa, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Wow, how's the basement looking?
It's amazing. It's more than we ever dreamed of.
Well, speaking of dreams,
he's a very handy man.
Yes, he is. Well, speaking of dreams, I mean, was it something like out of a dream itself to have this gentleman knock on your door or receive something on your inbox saying, "Hi, here I am. I'd like to meet with you." Tell us about that, please.
Definitely. I got a message from him, and then we spoke on the phone and told him my story about Victoria, and we just clicked, and he wanted to do this, our basement over, and make a playroom for Victoria, and it just was mind-blowing because we totally unexpected, came out of the blue, and didn't know if it was for real, and here we are with this beautiful basement playroom for Victoria and my boys, and it's incredible.
Well, it sounds so simple, doesn't it, Lisa?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, being a parent, I don't know if you weren't listening before, but being a parent is a hard job. On a good day, you know, you have those moments throughout the day that are very, very trying. Then you get those like periods that are like, oh, my God, my kid, my son, my daughter are just amazing. This is why I do it. And then when you have a child with a disability or an illness, I mean, it takes it to a whole nother level of parenting, of exhaustion, of being rewarded. And obviously, financial strain is something that every couple or every individual with a child struggles with, that Jimmy certainly knows about, being a single parent.
Right.
And to have the extra challenge and to have it possibly somewhat alleviated when Jimmy comes knocking at your door and says, "Listen, I'd like to contribute because, you know, you're a family that needs to worry about something less in your life," and to have an environment that you can maybe just take a little bit of a deeper breath and sigh and take a good nap in once in a while.
Yeah, I wish. It's very nice to have him come along and to help us in that situation because, like you said, you know, working and have three kids, and with her illness, I had to slow down working and, you know, cut back my days, and financially it was difficult. And for him to come into our life is just, there's no words.
I imagine there's that no you words. Must have been obviously confronted with a lot of different people, friends and family, that were saying like how incredibly lucky and fortunate you are. And
definitely.
And it's a great thing because I feel that, you know, we can't fix what happens to our children. All we can do is provide the best environment, the best education, the best health care, et cetera. And certainly things of this caliber, like renovating a basement, are, you know, way down on a list of priorities, especially when it costs thousands and thousands of dollars.
Talk
about a nice gesture that was given to Jimmy that you partook in, I believe. Tools?
I'm sorry, what was it then?
Tools?
Go ahead.
Wasn't there a nice gesture that was given to Jimmy as a thank you?
To Jimmy? Yes, he got all new tools. It was incredible. From the Today Show, they gave him a whole slew of new tools to help with the basement. And so many people have reached out to us from this because he's one of a kind. I don't know anybody out there like him that dedicates their time and money and everything to a family and to a kid in need.
I believe this is a State Farm issued platform, Neighbors Helping Neighbors, and I also believe they contributed another $1,000, whether it was a Today Show or not. But I mean that pales in the overall scheme of what he outputs in terms of sweat and physical labor.
But it's
a respect thing. It's something that's given to him to realize that, listen, we appreciate, you know, all that you've done.
Right.
And that's nice.
Right.
And I know Jimmy doesn't want anything in return, but hey.
No.
How many times do you drop your tape measure off the second story when you're framing a house and it's blown to bits, right?
All the time.
All the time, right? So that must have made you feel a little bit of comfort. And also, obviously, because I'm sure, I mean, I'm one of those people that I don't like people to do things for me or go out of their way. So I imagine that sometimes when he's hammering away in your basement, you're like, oh, my God, I feel horrible.
I feel so bad, especially when it's at night or after work or on the weekends when he has his own son and, you know, his own work to complete, and he's there with us.
Yeah,
in that basement, sweating and doing it.
Yeah, and you can send him down a cold beer or make him a nice grilled cheese sandwich, but I'm sure as a party felt guilty.
No, he's a health freak, so I don't know about that.
Well, he needs carbs as a triathlete, right?
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, I'm really, really happy to hear about this. But tell me a little bit about Victoria and how sweet she is and how this is a great role model for Jimmy to come into the house for you and your husband, the importance of community and giving back, but even for your sons as well.
Victoria, I'll tell you about her. She is the happiest little girl. She was diagnosed with her disease at 21 months old, and she's 5 now. And every day she amazes me because she is so strong. She's always smiling. She's been through more than we will ever go through in our lifetime. And what she's gone through is incredible. And the way she carries herself and stays strong and smiles, just it keeps us going. It keeps me certainly going because she never complains, never cries, never is bothered by it. She loves going to doctors, hospitals, getting treatments and IVs, and it's part of her life. And thank God that she's the strong little girl she is, because it helps us and makes it easier on us. So we're blessed to have a little girl that's this strong. And having Jimmy come in, and he sees her, and she's excited to see him every time he comes, and it just makes it easier and for all of us. We're blessed to have him in our life. And, you know, we've been through a roller coaster ride with her disease. Just, it's not easy. We just keep trucking along and smiling and just praying to God that every day gets a little better. You know, it's an unknown disease. It's very rare. There's no cure for it. So most children, with ITP end up outgrowing it. And unfortunately, they labeled her as chronic. She wasn't able to fight it and get through the treatments and medications. So it's a struggle every day.
And I can't imagine how it is, how difficult it is, how trying it is for you and your husband and even your sons, because I'm sure, you know, there's obviously different ramifications because they feel like sometimes maybe Victoria gets more attention. There's always obviously something that you have to address.
I feel bad for my kids, the boys.
Yeah.
She definitely does. Like I said before earlier, that I was working a full-time job and going about life until she got diagnosed. And then it was, okay, I need to be in the hospital. I'm spending, you know, a night here, a night there, and doctor appointments. And so I had to cut back on work. And it was very difficult because you're used to your salary and working and then taking a step back. You have to, because the only thing that matters is your health and your children. And so, you know, him coming into our life was incredible because we wouldn't be able to do our basement and certainly do what he's doing to it. We were thinking four walls and, you know, floor and paint, and that was it. And what
that's
he's
not
doing
his style.
Is,
he's going to go soup to nuts.
It is incredible. It's more than we could ever have dreamed of.
Fantastic. So, well, Lisa, thank you so much for your time, and so happy to hear that Victoria, you know, is doing as well as she can right now. And I wish her a happy and healthy life, long, long life, illness free. And enjoy that basement. Thank you so much for your time. And keep spreading the word about Jimmy.
Yes, he's amazing.
Have a great day.
From the bottom of our hearts. Thank you. You too.
My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Jimmy Palanuno is my guest today. He's the founder of Be a Kid, an organization that was founded back in 2012. He's a general contractor out in Long Island and also a father of an 8-year-old, correct?
Yes.
Now, what a role model. What an incredible role model you are on many levels, but to also bring your son maybe on weekdays or maybe some weekends to show him what you're doing and why you're doing.
He knows what it's about. He does help out with every year we do Toys for Tots, so we'll get toys together for a local hospital and a Ronald McDonald House. He'll come with me to deliver the toys, so he's getting more familiar with what it's all about. Next year, you know, I want to introduce him to more helping out, coming to work with me on some of the projects.
But I imagine he understands the message and the meaning and the purpose behind this.
Yes, he knows what it's all about. Yeah, that's been, I would say that's probably been instilled since he could talk.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I mean, it's an integral characteristic that I think that parents are behooved to do because speaking of like even just my other conversation before about going in political office, being a public servant, but we all are servants, you know, to our community. I mean, it takes a tribe. I mean, it's kind of a corny saying, but it's so true. I mean, whatever, any level, I mean, just helping out because, I mean, we all have a duty. You don't have to get paid.
No.
You know, we can hopefully get paid well in our, you know, in a profession, choosing a profession. If not, you're doing something you love. But the fact is, you know, giving back is just instrumental.
Yes. Well, I mean, there's many forms of payment without money.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. So speaking of money, it's nice to think that all this is coming from sponsors, from Lowe's, from Home Depot, from GE, from Weyheiser. Isn't that a big lumber yard or something like that? But it's not the reality.
No.
The reality is you have a GoFundMe page.
Correct.
And you do triathlons.
Yes.
You are now a triathlete. That's now on your resume, which a couple years ago it never was because I guess you never dawned on you. But you're doing anything to raise awareness and to raise funds.
Basically, there's right now there's three parts of Be a Kid. So the one part is doing work for the families on their homes. The second part of it is the triathlons and the CrossFit events. So any event that I partake in every year, I set up a GoFundMe page to raise money for that year for all the events. And then that money raised will go to Cohen's Hospital every year.
Children's Hospital.
Children's Hospital.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So that's the second part. And the third part is the Toys for Tots drive. So every year, last year we had 30 boxes at various locations. So it gets crazy. You know, I'm juggling.
That's a lot.
Picking up boxes and then compiling. My living room becomes kind of like a mini toy house. And then we deliver little toys to the hospital or Ronald McDonald's house.
Another great example for your son to see.
Which he sees all about, which he's all about that. And then, like I said, the 4th Avenue next year will be a Be a Kid child-parent competition kind of thing where all the kids can interact with their parents and have
great.
A day of fitness and having a good time.
So it's great. The focus is on health.
Health, unity,
family,
unity, team, all that good stuff.
And that's happening in the summer of 2018-ish?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. And that's going to come, probably people should look for that on Facebook?
Yeah, it'll definitely be on Facebook, yes.
And on Facebook, search for Be the Kid?
Be a Kid.
So Be a Kid.
Be a Kid with two D's at the end.
Oh, two D's. All right.
Yes.
So let's go back to the actual funding here. So we realize that you don't have big sponsors behind you.
No.
You're doing GoFundMe. So I imagine that you're absorbing a lot of the cost.
Yes. I mean, you know, it's the funding is the hardest part.
Sure.
Doing the work is easy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just
your own sweat equity.
Yeah. You know, it's the funding, which, you know, it's tough because we don't always get the funding that we need. But hopefully, you know, like with Victoria's Basin, we get some funding for the material and we absorb whatever else is not funded and the labor as well.
Have you approached a big box store?
Not yet. I have one lumberyard I get majority of my lumber with that's in the works of trying to get material discounted and things like that. Hopefully that works out.
Yeah, I can't see why they would want to be on this.
It's a great platform to be
aligned with. Well, you know, I imagine if you take that great piece on the Today Show, along with this interview, of course. And you send it to, you know, the box stores, Lowe's, Home Depot, et cetera, that, you know, why wouldn't they want to be on board?
Yeah. I mean, it just makes it that much easier to get the work done.
And more importantly, you could probably do more.
Well, that's the whole thing. At the end of the day, it's right now it's 1-2 families a year with the hopes of 5-7 families a year in the near future.
Yeah, fantastic.
You know, but I still also want to keep it personal.
Yes, yes.
You know, I don't want to be commercialized.
Yes, you don't want a crew that and you come in the beginning and the end and that's it.
That's not, no. I enjoy working, getting dirty, and being part of the family.
And you are. You actually were invited to attend one of the family's son who graduated pre-K?
Yeah, baby Easton.
That's great.
So I was up there in May with Frankie. He came with me.
Your son, Frankie.
Frankie.
Yeah.
And it was probably, I'm going to say, heartwarming. I mean, to see Easton, you know, progress so well with his condition, to see him, you know, cross over that little bridge of pre-K into kindergarten, which was amazing. And then to see really how Frankie interacted, because you have a child who never saw a child with, you know, a skin issue. And, you know, generally kids with bleeding or scabs. Other kids might get scared. Frankie just hugged him and was adoring him.
That's great.
Like it was nothing.
See, that's vital because depending on where our listeners live, it's different demographic makeup.
Yes.
For example, the town I grew up in, Freehold, New Jersey, it was a third black in high school. Now, one of the schools I spoke at the other day, I looked in the audience when I walked around, it was all Mexican.
Okay.
So it's good to be in mixed environments demographic reasons, age reasons, and or for differences.
Yeah.
To see people who have, like my son and daughter, more my son who's 8 years old, goes to all the events that I host that are for events for people with disabilities, whether athletic endeavors or just lectures or seminars, et cetera, if it's appropriate. So he's not thrown by someone who's in a wheelchair or somebody who has one leg or blind or deaf or both, multiple disabilities. And I mean it's hard for everybody, obviously, to get in those confines of circles. But I think it's important because, you know, they just do things differently.
Yes.
And obviously, when you see a beautiful hot rod going down the street, you're drawn to it because it is different, just
right.
like people, human beings.
Sure.
We all come in different shapes, sizes, and abilities.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
So to expose children at a very young age, I think, is great because when we think about kids nowadays, I mean, so many of them are – I remember someone fairly close to me in my life came out to me, I don't know, about 10 years ago that she was gay. I knew she was gay.
Right.
But, I mean, it's a whole nother level of acceptance. Like my I know kids in 10th grade and younger, my peer, high school, junior, senior, whatever. Yeah, they're gay, whatever. So, I mean, it's a whole different level of acceptance.
Sure.
And that's to be part and parcel with the landscape of the country and the people that live in it.
Yeah, I agree.
So what do you love about carpentry the most?
Oh, the ability to start with nothing and create something out of your head. You know, I have... The two loves of my business are the framing aspect, the grunt work, which keeps me physical.
The bones, the nucleus
bones,
of the house. Which a lot of people don't take a lot of pride in. They think it's just 2x4s and some, 2x10s.
I tend to frame like I do finish work. I have that
mentality
about it. So I feel if it starts right, it's going to generally end right.
Absolutely.
You know, and then you get the finish work, which is the part where I can really be creative and have my own vision and keep adding to it and keep playing with it and keep tweaking
it. Icing on a cake.
And if I don't like it, I'll just redo it.
Exactly. Now, by no means am I comparing my ability and carpentry to your level. But for me, because I guess I love it as a hobbyist, that I find myself, in bed or whatever, thinking about, all right, how am I going to make that joint? How am I going to connect this piece to that piece, whatever? Is that something that you get consumed with?
Yeah.
I imagine as a proprietor, you have to be.
You do. And there's been times, the beauty of the finish aspect of doing some of these projects is, you kind of lose yourself. You can zone out from everything else and you just focus just on that. And it becomes, like we said, therapeutic.
Time passes quickly.
Have I hit obstacles? Like, how am I going to do this?
Oh, sure.
Of course, we all do. Make mistakes, redo it, call it a night, restart the next day, clear mind, get it done. That's happened too. Sometimes your brain is just fried. And you guys just call it a night and start the next day and 1, 2, 3, you figure it out.
Going back to the financial ramifications to be a kid.
Yes.
Was it your initial idea that, all right, maybe if I do physical events, races, triathlons, CrossFit?
No.
CrossFit.
It's funny how that started.
How did that start?
All right. So back in 2014, my good friend Scott Berker approached me saying that he wanted to do Lake Placid Ironman. In honor of Be a Kid.
Quite the challenge, that race.
Right. Yeah. So I said, that's great. I'd love to sponsor you. Whatever you need, let me know. He's like, why don't you do it? I laughed at him. I was like, you're out of your mind. I go, number one, I haven't been in the gym in 10 years. I was out of all kind of fitness stuff. Working, but nothing gym related. I go, plus, I could swim in a pool. I played football all my life, so I could run down a football field. I could bike, and mountain biking. I go, but not that kind of stuff. Mm. So now I'll sponsor you, whatever you need. 2 weeks later, he said, I signed up. You're going to do it? Nope. Good luck. All you. Let me know what you need.
Let me guess. He signed you up.
No. So that night I'm in. So that night I'm in bed and I'm tossing and turning. You think about things, right?
Of course.
Like you said, and I'm
it's
like,
a challenge.
You know, yeah. I'm like, so how do I have someone do something for Be a Kid, a big event like this, and me not be part of it? So that one guy on one shoulder got a better hold of the other guy, and next day I signed up for a full Ironman, never doing one of them, never doing anything tri-related. And then the following day, I signed
kind of
up
daunting,
for,
right?
Yeah. The next day, I signed up for CrossFit, and the rest was history. I just got back into shape.
How much time did you allow yourself to train for this? Placid.
6 months.
Good.
Which I was probably, mocked about because I wouldn't say mocked, but when I had spoken to my tri coach at the time, he had said when I talked to him about training, he's like, all right, what event do you want to do? And I said, Lake Placid Ironman. He's all right, what year do you want to do it? I'm like, oh, this, coming year. He's like, this coming year with no training at all, never done one. Like, people generally start with a sprint, go to an Olympic,
absolutely,
do a half,
sure,
do a full, 2 years. You're going to go from cold turkey. I'm like, yeah.
Full blown. Right out of the gate.
So I did that. I failed. The first year I failed Placid. I failed the swim aspect of it.
So the first event.
I failed the first leg of it.
How far did you get into it? Was it a time cut off?
Everything's time cut off. Okay. So by 6 minutes, I missed a time cut.
Six minutes in water is vast. That's a long time.
Yeah. So, you have a time cut, and by 6 minutes, I didn't make it.
But did you feel good? I mean, for training?
Going into it training-wise, I felt good. Mentally, when I failed, I felt like I let everyone down.
Yeah.
Right? But we still raised $8,000 between Scott and myself.
And that's the ultimate goal.
That was the ultimate goal. Yeah. So the next day, signed up again for it. And then it was just whole complete different training.
Oh, I love it. You're a glutton. It's great.
It was like,
determined.
I'm determined. And so training for Lake Placid 16 was a whole different training scheme. I incorporated a lot more strength into it where I neglected a lot of it the first year. I changed my whole nutrition pattern. And like I said, I did the event, laughing, smiling, finishing.
Great.
Plenty of energy at the end.
And money raised?
More money raised again for Be a Kid, for Cohen's Hospital again. Yeah. So it was all positive things.
Fantastic. And how well did that new increased fitness level transfer to working?
It was just
fantastic. Yeah. I mean, you must have felt much more energetic on a job site.
Yeah.
Capable.
Always having more energy.
Oh, I'll carry that 2x12x20 by myself. Oh, you need a new header up? Here, guys, I'll hold it. You hit the nail gun.
Exactly. But I have a good time with it all. The training is definitely my second release,
Well, it's interesting because I never thought of it until you just said this, but on another level, you're doing something that perhaps these kids also can't do, physical endeavors.
Well, it's...
So it's emblematic of the overall picture and platform, what you're giving these kids, a great home or an improved home or a new space, a reinvented space, a space that's much more functional and well-serving for a family and or one individual with disabilities and or illness. And then not only that, but you're going out there and raising awareness through the publicized aspect of, Be a Kid and being the physical... juggernaut that you are on many levels is also proving that, this is what can be done through sport and the human spirit.
It's like, you look at the child who's sick, right? And, they didn't choose this to be sick, but they don't quit. They don't give up. They keep going, right? Mm. So my thing is I don't quit. I don't give up. I mean, I just completed the Lake Placid Half Ironman 4 weeks ago. Barely trained for it. Stupid, but I barely trained for it. Yeah. I paid for it.
But you're a little bit seasoned now, so you know what to expect, and that's a huge thing.
And I paid for it.
Yeah.
But like the whole thing behind, I didn't quit. Yeah, I wanted to.
Exactly.
I got it's like, it's cramped. You want to, but you just keep going because the bigger picture at the end.
You just said something very interesting that I speak about in my talks about being disabled. I mean, no one chooses to have a disability in life, but the good thing is there's never been a better time to have a disability. With medical advancements, technology on so many different levels and fronts. Obviously, it never moves as fast as we want it to because certainly when it impacts us and or our children, our family.
Yeah.
But I mean, the advancements have been just gargantuan.
You'd be surprised. I mean, it's I had the, I mean, I'm going to call it a privilege because doing the Ironman, I witnessed a couple. One was blind. You know, it was a blind couple. You know, she was blind and he was not, and he was leading her throughout the whole event.
The tether?
Swim.
Yeah.
The bike.
It's great, isn't it?
The run. I mean.
It's amazing. I've done a race a few years out in California. It's called the San Diego. I forget the name, the full name of the triathlon, but it's all for people with disabilities.
Okay.
And I've seen, I mean, the most incredible things.
Yeah.
A boy, his name is Randy, I can't remember his last name, no arms and no legs. He gives us prosthetic, like, fins.
Okay.
And, I mean, the most heart-wrenching and heartwarming sights that you'll ever see in your life.
Right.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I was part of a team, and I did the bike leg, 56 mile.
Nice.
I'm a biker. So the woman who was on my team was a probably one of the top then swimming female triathletes in the world. Her name is, oh my God, I'm bad on names today because it was a while ago. This was like 1997. But she's Aussie, and she was incredible. She was my swim partner. And guess who was one of my fellow partners on the bike standing next to me?
He was
Robin Williams.
Oh, get out of
here.
Nice.
So there's part of a, like a celebrity little.
Nice, very nice.
Challenged Athletes Foundation. That's what it's called, the Challenged
Nice.
Athletes Foundation. Big organization, huge, but it's called the San Diego Challenged Athletes Triathlon, which is incredible. So, I mean, that alone was just eye-opening because, I have a visual disability and I do things differently and I can ride a bike and I see potholes and debris and twigs and stuff like that later. And kids say to me, well, how do you ride a bike? Because this is all I've known all my life.
Sure.
Just like you. I mean, you can swing a hammer in your sleep.
Right.
And we do all these things. We take it for granted, but we know there are, you know, millions of people out there who want to do things that they can't do because of disabilities.
But they get them done.
But they get them done.
But they get
and
them
or,
done.
You know, hope that they can get them done through the advancements and or aids of technology, assistive technology, and through, you know, people who are just like yourself in different capacities who are giving back, whether it's renovating a basement, putting an addition on their house, giving them the time of day, teaching someone how to read Braille, giving someone a name of a doctor who's working on an experimental drug out in an incredible facility that, you know, can have a major change on their life trajectory.
Just even to someone to listen to.
Someone to
talk to. You know, it's as simple as that. I mean, right? Just kindness.
Yeah, it's kindness. And it's been great connecting with you, Jimmy.
Thanks for having me.
Because, I mean, you are a person who represents carpentry. I love carpentry. I love sports. And more importantly, I love helping people out, certainly people in the disabled community.
Thank you.
Fine work.
Thank you.
And look for you on Facebook under Be a Kid. Two Ds, Be a Kid, KIDD. My name is Mark Farrell. This has been Insight. If you want to donate to Jimmy, tools, time, services, dishwashers, you name
it. Just contact me.
Facebook, Jimmy, Be the Kid, KIDD. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for joining me. If you want me to speak at your school, college, corporation, check out markfarrellmotivation.com, markfarrellmotivation.com. A special thank you to Kelsey. Kelsey's leaving the PRN family. She's got some greener pastures. Kelsey, you've been an incredible addition to this family. We're going to miss you. I'm going to have your picture plastered up on the wall to feel like you're always behind the controls. All the best to you, Kelsey. Welcome, Alex. My name is Mark Farrell. The founder of the Progressive Radio Network is next. Gary Noel, have a great day.